Okay, thanks for coming. So today I'm going to talk about GKZ hypergeometric series. So first, before I forget, GKZ stands for Gelfand Kapranov Zelwinski. So I'm going to talk about some results on ODEs motivated by some mathematical physics problem. ODE means ordinary differential equations. So in my talk, I'm going to focus on the Picard Fuchs equation for some Clapeyron one parameter family. Of algebraic Clapeyron varieties. Picard Fuchs equation is by definition the differential equation killing the period integrals of the Clapeyron variety. So basically it describes the deformation of the complex structure of this variety. So by mathematical physics, I meant gauge linear signal model. Actually, what I will be using is the Clapeyron Landau-Ginzburg model correspondence. Okay, so most of the results that I will be talking about can be applied to a generic one parameter family of Clapeyron variety. But for concreteness, let me focus on the following very special one. I consider the family of elliptic curves. So these are cubics in P2. The defining equation is fxyz psi equals x cubed plus y cubed plus z cubed minus 3 psi xyz. So it sits inside. So f equals 0 defines a family sitting inside T2. Parameterized by xyz and p1 parameterized by psi. So this is p1 is the base and p2 is the fiber. So that's a picture. So the Picard Fuchs equation, which are integrals of some holomorphic volume form on the A cycle and the B cycle, the torus would be the following is theta squared minus alpha theta plus 1 over 3 theta plus 2 over 3. Theta is alpha dd alpha. Alpha is psi to the negative 3. So if you try to solve for the solutions to this differential equation, you'll get the integrals over the A and B cycles. Now let's focus on the point alpha equals 0 or psi equals infinity. That's a singularity on this space. The fiber would degenerate. It's easy to see that this differential equation has a regular singularity at alpha equals 0. And by ignoring this term, this differential operator, essentially we're looking at theta squared. So the solutions would be 1 and log alpha, meaning that there's one regular. So for the basis of solutions near alpha equals 0, there's a regular period. Let me denote it by this. It's a hypergeometric function. 3n factorial divided by n factorial cubed, alpha divided by 3 cubed to the n. So it's like 1 plus O alpha. And there's a log period, which is determined by this. So it's log of alpha plus some regular thing. To get an exact formula for this omega alpha, there's a standard way called the Frobenius method. By the way, this is my motivation and background. So the Frobenius method says the following. You take the regular solution, and then you deform it by replacing each n by n plus epsilon. So you get gamma 3n plus 3 epsilon. Let me rewrite it a little bit. So this is the coefficient is gamma 3n plus 1 divided by gamma n plus 1 cubed. So if you deform the gamma function, what you get is this times q epsilon times alpha divided by 3 cubed n plus epsilon. It's q alpha, q epsilon is gamma epsilon plus 1 cubed divided by gamma 3 epsilon plus 1. That's just some functional equation for the gamma function. Now what you do is to regard this epsilon as a formal parameter, and then do the Taylor expansion. So by dimension reasons, we know there are only two solutions. So therefore, you only need to take the first derivative of this function, then you get the full set of solutions to this differential operator. And these derivatives will be called the higher Frobenius functions. It's obtained by using the Frobenius method. So they are definitely not solutions to the original differential operator, but they are equally interesting. Especially in recent years, it appears in various contexts. Let me mention a few. Those are actually my motivations for the project that I was talking about. So the first context is point counting. Let me denote this variety by this notation, then total space by E. So E sub psi means the fiber at psi. Point counting, this is due to Candelas and his collaborators, which says the following. If you consider this elliptic curve defined over FP, this is a projective variety. We want to do count the number of points on this elliptic curve. So there's a cheaper way of doing this. So you think of this as an affine variety in C3 defined over FP. So the counting of on this curve is the same as the counting on this affine space. So it's a p-adic number. Of course, the number of points on this C3 of FP is just the number of points of FP cubed, p sub prime, which is p cubed. So if you do this, you regard this as a p-adic number, what you get is something times p to the 0, because we are expanding it in powers of p, plus something times p to the 1 plus something times p to the 2 plus something times p cubed plus da da da. Since the number of the total point, the number of the points in this ambient space is p cubed, we know this one must be 0. And if you can compute this, this is omega naught of alpha. So alpha is defined of fp is 3, is psi to the negative 3. That's omega 1 and that's omega 2. Now, if you relax this condition, you consider the elliptic curve defined over FQ, which is P to the S. Then the number of points in C3 defined over FQ is equal to P to the 3S. Now, the natural bound would be P to the 3S. You would have a non-vanishing term over here. This would be omega 3 alpha, da da da. So these higher Frobenius functions would appear as the point counting of the Clavier variety or the elliptic curve. That's the first context. The second one is the Gromov-Witten theory, which is the, what's called curve counting. If you consider the, that's, yes?
Is that supposed to be clear or is it a theorem?
This is a theorem.
Is it a hard theorem?
No, it's not hard. I mean, the computation is not hard, it's some combinatorics, but the explanation using Hodge theory is still lacking. Nobody knows why the counting would be related to the period integrals. So that's an elliptic curve. Let's count the number of curves sitting inside of this curve. So by given tau, if you consider the generating series of the curves of degree d inside this elliptic curve, what you get would be the following. Here, I want to mention that epsilon would be p in this expansion. So in given tau, epsilon is the hyperplane class in the cohomology of p2. So it's c h divided by h cubed. Again, that you have this one relation condition is due to dimension reason. That's the H is the class in H one, H upper one comma one. So if you take the cube, you get zero. So given this I function is essentially the following. Now you replace epsilon by H, and then you also multiply the whole thing by the class of this elliptic curve. So it's three H times omega naught alpha plus omega 1 alpha h plus omega 2 alpha h squared plus da da da. As you can see, due to this relation, so this is a cohomology valued thing in p2. Due to this relation, only the first few terms would contribute because h cubed is equal to 0. However, if you consider the active variant cohomology, then higher order terms, higher Frobenius functions would appear very naturally as the coefficients in this expansion. Again, there's no explanation of why these two should be related. Of course, there are they are related by the explicit results, but there's no good explanation for that. And also, I want to mention another context in which this omega 2 appears very naturally. That's the, it's actually some commutation in amplitudes. So if you look at the sunrise diagram, let me draw the diagram and then explain what it means. So that's the momentum. You have the mass m1, m2, m3. There's an elliptic curve family parameterized by k and the masses, which underlie the commutation of amplitudes. Is for the special case where the masses are equal, you get an integral like this. It's d x dy, x one, I guess, are the momentum traveling along the loops, some function, some polynomial. Okay. So that this gives the amplitudes. I don't know why, but it's some commutation. But this is also omega 2 assigned, associated to the curve family. This is a polynomial. If you look at some natural integrals of this algebraic variety, you get the amplitude. OK, so these are very interesting contexts in which the higher Frobenius function appears. Today I'm going to focus on this piece.
What is d?
G is a very special polynomial. You want me to write down the explicit form of G?
No, like what kind of thing?
It's a polynomial.
Is
that it? I guess it's the inverse of Laplacian. This is 1 over G plus the rho of the propagator, or the contribution from the propagators.
Can you explain again what is the second part?
The second part is this.
Where is curve
counting? It's counting some intersection numbers of on MGN, the modular space of curves. Again, you want more details?
Just a bit more,
so each omega k is the generating series of something like this. It's q to the d, mm-hmm. some Gromov-Witten invariance of genus 0 and degree d. I guess I should add one more. K is the degree in terms of h. Mm-hmm. So each coefficient itself is a generating series of invariance. So my talk will be divided into two parts. In the first part, I'm going to derive some nice expressions for this omega 2. In the second part, I will be explaining why these objects would satisfy the differential equations. Fine. Any questions so far? My motivation actually came from this problem. I want to give a realization of this higher Frobenius functions in terms of enumerative geometry. And then I found that there are actually some chain integrals on the curve. Okay, let's try to solve for this omega 2. This actually has been solved. You just look at the degree 2 term in this expansion, then you get something like log alpha squared. But it's not nice, it's very singular. So what we do is the following. We look at the original generating series of these higher Frobenius functions. We know that the first two satisfy the Pickoff operator. Then we compute this one. The result is alpha divided by 3 cubed squared times epsilon squared. So as you can see, modular epsilon squared, this one is 0. That's why the first few terms would be killed by this differential operator. And you can even write down the differential operators satisfied by this omega case is alpha divided by 3 cubed k minus 2 divided by k minus 2 squared. So here I have used the convention that negative powers means 0. In particular, this one is equal to 0. Now from this, we can also see the first non-trivial higher Frobenius function is a solution to this inhomogeneous Pickoff equation. It's actually constant, okay, because k is equal to 2. By the way, I think I mentioned that there's a factor q of epsilon when I write down the formula for the generating series of higher Frobenius functions. This q epsilon in the context of in the curve counting context is the gamma class assigned to the curve with some cohomology class, sequence of cohomology class. It's called a Hissbrooks multiplicative sequence of cohomologies. And it's also interesting on its own. Okay, now let me focus on this omega 2. It satisfies the inhomogeneous Pickoff equation. Therefore, we can use the standard method in ODE to give an alternative form for this omega 2. The technique is called the Wronskian's method, which says the following. Once you have solved for the solutions to the homogeneous differential equation, let's say we have already found pi 1, pi 0 of alpha, pi pi 1 of alpha, which are solutions to this homogeneous differential equation. Then what you do is something very easy. You define the Ruskin. Let me use psi. I will be switching between psi and alpha. There's no ambiguity. What you do is to form this Ruskin, which is pi naught prime, pi 1 minus pi 1 prime, pi naught. That's the derivative with respect to psi. Then the solution to the inhomogeneous equation has the following form. It's equal to a times pi 1 pi naught plus b times pi 1 plus some constant times some integral pi 1 pi naught psi pi 1 v minus pi 1 v pi 1 psi pi naught v. Okay, this is really cheap, but the first geometric realization actually comes from this formula. So if you simplify this a little bit, what you get is the following. You get I divided by the first, okay, I want to take pi naught pi 1 to be the periods omega naught and omega 1, which is tau times omega 1. So this is the integral of some holomorphic volume form on the A cycle. That's the integral over the B cycle. So if you normalize this integral by dividing it by the first regular period, what you get is A plus B tau, of course, plus C times the integral from some base point to alpha 1 minus, let me switch to tau, V tau minus V dV. That's the change of coordinates from psi to tau. In this particular example, this alpha is actually a modular function because the elliptic curve family, as I mentioned earlier, is defined over P1. This P1 is some mass arithmetic object. It's the quotient of the upper half plane by some modular group. And this alpha would be, or psi would be some function which is invariant on the gamma of 3. It's given by some very explicit add function. So in this case, this add function is this. That's for this part. Now if you try to, again, simplify this a little bit by integrating the whole thing, you get a polylogarithm. This is the same reason why in the sunrise diagram, you would get a polylogarithm or dilogarithms. As I mentioned to you that in the sunrise diagram, the differential, the deformation problem is essentially the same as this one, except that you change the polynomial. By the way, there's a base point over here. It actually doesn't matter. If you change the base point, the difference would be accumulation of the periods, because you can check that the second derivative of the whole thing would be zero. This method is called Ashler integral. It's very useful in finding antiderivatives of modular forms. You can check that this ratio, the normalized period, sorry, the normalized integral is equal to this. Yes. In other words, I divided by omega zero is kind of the antiderivative of the antiderivative of this modular form. Suppose we want to find the antiderivative of this function, we just write down the actual integral, which is this one, and then take the first derivative. Again, it seems very easy, but it's kind of very useful in the theory of modular forms. Okay, that's not a geometric interpretation, but we can rewrite this. So I divided by, let me just call it I. I, if you change, again, the coordinates a little bit. So let me focus on this piece. The last one is the solution to the inhomogeneous differential equation. It's 1 over VdV, some cycle. That's the Poincaré dual of this guy. Well, omega alpha, omega V is the holomorphic volume form, holomorphic top form. EV, that's just a rewriting of this integral, but there's already an interpretation of this. So the base would be parameterized by psi or alpha. Now suppose we want to find the value of I at alpha, what we do is the following. We take the holomorphic volume form sitting on the fiber, and then take the Poincaré dual, you'll get a cycle sitting inside this elliptic curve. And then you do the parallel transport to everywhere in this modular space. So this will be alpha. That's some base point. And the parameter for this path would be V. This means the parallel transport of this cycle at itself, of course, is just this. And then you do parallel transport to the point of V. You get another cycle sitting in the fiber over V. So omega V wedge dV over V, this is the holomorphic top form on the fiber. And this is the holomorphic top form in the base. So this is the Clavier 2 form. It's the holomorphic 2 comma 0 form in the total space. And this extra solution is the integral over this symbol. You can find a very special point in this space so that this cycle actually vanishes. As I said, it's the Poincaré dual of some cohomology class, but there's some extra point, some special points in this modular space so that this is actually a linear combination, is the zero linear combination of the cycles. There's a point which is psi equal to zero. That's the orbifold the point in this modular space, P1, parameterized by psi. So this is the first signature of the special role played by the orbifold point. And actually, this is also a basic project, object in homological mirror symmetry. That's the Lefschetz symbol generating the Foucault category attached to the Foucault's attached to some singularity. If you were in the talk on transformer theory, you have seen the same picture. I'm going to explain why the integral in the transformer theory would be given by my omega 2, and why you would have this picture. So that's the explanation of why the differential equations are satisfied system. So I have found a chain, actual integral interpretation, actual integral representation and a Lefschetz symbol interpretation of the extra solution. Now I'm going to tell you why these objects would be satisfied, would satisfy the differential equation without actually doing any computation. The reason is that there's an underlying symmetry and the differential equations are the infinitesimal version of those symmetries. These objects, they are manifestly invariant on those symmetries. Therefore, they must be killed by the differential equations. Let me tell you what the symmetries are. So let me remind you that the family that I have is a family of varieties, right? But now let's not look at them as varieties. Let's think of them as a family of polynomials. Of course, this one contains all of the information if you regard them as varieties. But the polynomials mean more. So the polynomials are given by this. Let me kind of relax the condition on the coefficients. A0, x, y, z. So if you set a1, a2, a3 to be 1, then you get the original family. But now let's look at the symmetry of the whole family of polynomials. So this one would sit inside c3 parameterized by x, y, z cross c4 parameterized by these coordinates, a1, a2, a3, and a0. So the symmetries, or the GKZ symmetries, are symmetries of this fabrication of polynomials, or this family of polynomials, which act diagonally on the base and on the fiber. You can easily write down the generators for the GKZ symmetry in this particular example. So one of the generator would be the following: x, y, z, a1, a2, a3. So this is a generator of a copy of a C star action. Lambda x, y, z, lambda to the negative 3, a1, a2, a3. This transformation would preserve this polynomial. The infinitesimal version. So the infinitesimal version of the scaling would be the theta operator. So theta x is x ddx plus negative 3 theta a1 plus negative 1 theta a0. This one, when acting on f, or 1 over f, or e to the negative f, would be 0. So you can also scale the other coordinates independently. Then you get some other linear differential operators. These are actually the Euler homogeneity condition. So these are the linear differential operators in this system. There's another differential operator, which is the following, is x cubed times y cubed times z cubed equals xyz cubed. So these are relations satisfied by the monomials over here. So a very easy way, there's no infinitesimal version, it's just some relation. A very easy way to encode this relation is to use this differential operator. Minus dda naught cubed. This is a differential operator. Let me call this a dgkz. It wouldn't kill f, but it kills 1 over f and e to the negative f. Okay. So now we have the symmetries. We can ask about the invariance of these symmetries. There are some natural candidates for this invariance. of the infinitesimal version of GKZ symmetries. This is by definition the kernel of the differential operators, differential equation system called the GKZ system. So the first or the zeroth invariant would be alpha, which is equal to negative 3 cubed a1, a2, a3 divided by a0 cubed. I keep the 3 cubed for a reason, because it has something to do with the arithmetic of the variety that I'm talking about. So that's one natural invariant of this GKZ symmetry. And another one is the following. If you look at some cycle in the projective variety defined by this equation, and you look at this holomorphic, sorry, this differential form, well, mu is x dy, which dz plus the cyclic permutations. Since since 1 over f is killed by those differential operators, and this mu has a very simple scaling behavior, this thing is essentially invariant, or equivariant if you want. And this is a cycle under your infinitesimal version of the GKZ symmetry. The homology class of this cycle would also be invariant. So this integral would be invariant. It's actually a function on the base only. There are more invariants than functions on the base. But this one is a very natural one. And also you can talk about these integrals. Again, this is the invariant under the set of GKZ symmetries. And if you take D to be invariant, then this one would be invariant. In particular, you can take D as if you take D to be zero infinity squared, I'm working in the affine chart where Z is equal to one over here. So if you take this one, it will be invariant under the GKZ symmetry. The reason is that all of the symmetries would act diagonally, act by scaling on the coordinates. And that one is definitely invariant under the scalings. Zero and infinity are invariant. You can also take other chains to domains if you want. The third set of candidates, the third set of invariants would be the following. Is the integral over some three-dimensional domain dz. Again, e to the negative f is invariant on these differential operators. And if you take delta to be invariant on the scalings, for example, if you take delta to be this one, then this would be invariant. All right, so there are many more natural invariants, which I'm not going to talk about. But this is already interesting. The first one would be period integrals of the projective variety. The second one is some two-dimensional integral in P2. The third one would be called the oscillating integrals assigned to this polynomial defined on C3. So this would be period integrals. This would be the so-called oscillating integrals. So the talk given yesterday on Chern-Simons theory is an integral of this form. And they are, the speaker found the interpretation of this one over some Lefschetz symbol by doing some computations. But from here, it's very clear. The reason is you can integrate out dz. What you get is, of course, this. Again, I take this domain to be 0 infinity cubed. And I have two independent integrals of this form, because I have only two period integrals. I actually have three independent integrals of this particular form. The reason is, that in order to reduce this to this, I want the d to be the tubular neighborhood of gamma. Not every d can be realized that way. That's why I have lost some solutions to the GKZ symmetry. So the period integrals to period integrals would be omega 0 and omega 1 satisfied by the homogeneous version of the peak of X operator. And I have three, let me call them domain integrals, both in 2D and 3D. This is two-dimensional, this is three-dimensional. I have three. They are actually omega naught, omega 1, omega 2. They are killed by this GKZ operator, which is this one. In fact, if we are restricted to the slice where A1, A2, A3 are equal to 1, that's a particular slice in the GKZ orbit. So it's some gauge fixing. You can actually see this one is the theta operator times the peak of X operator. From here, it's clear that the solutions to the inhomogeneous peak of X equation is a solution to the GKZ system. It's an honest solution to this GKZ symmetry. Therefore, omega 2 would automatically satisfy, would be killed by this operator. I want to make a comment about this realization of the solutions to the GKZ system. So if you apply the same procedure of deriving differential equations from symmetries, to the following polynomial, K, which is, if I remember it correctly, plus M3 squared Z XY plus YZ plus ZX minus K squared XYZ. That's a sunrise diagram. This is a family of polynomials. You can apply the procedure to derive differential equations satisfied by these polynomials. And then the invariant, that's one invariant, dx dy, so in the z equal to 1 patch, is a solution to the GKZ system. In particular, it satisfies the inhomogeneous Picard-Fuchs operator attached to this elliptic curve family. You might wonder, why not homogeneous Picard-Fuchs operator? As I said, this one is not a tubular neighborhood. It's not obviously a tubular neighborhood of a cycle. If it were, then of course, it would satisfy the homogeneous version of the Picard-Fuchs operator. But that I cannot find such a realization doesn't mean it is not. So this statement follows from a very explicit computation on this integral, which is the same as this integral. You can see that this integral is not a linear combination of the solutions to the Picard-Fuchs operator. Therefore, it must be a solution to the inhomogeneous one. As I said, in particular, if you work out the actual integral formula for this inhomogeneous solution, for this solution to the inhomogeneous Picard-Fuchs operator, you'll get antiderivative of the antiderivative of a particular modular form. That's where you get the dilogarithm. You can apply this procedure to any loop diagrams, I guess, as long as you can reduce the commutation to the commutation on the deformation of a family of variety, the deformation of some polynomials, actually, not necessarily varieties. All right, so I have different ways of realizing the extra solution to the solution of omega 2, which is a solution to the GKZ system. A natural question is to ask whether this inhomogeneous, whether this solution to the inhomogeneous Peacock equation can actually be realized as some geometric object from the perspective of the curve. As I said, if this is not a two-way neighborhood, then you cannot do this. But it turns out that there is such a realization. So the extra solution, the omega 2, is actually a chain integral on the curve. Although I cannot find a very explicit reduction from this to a trivial neighborhood of the cycle. I actually talked to a lot of experts asking about this question, whether this extra solution can be realized geometrically, and the answer was no. But then I looked into the literature and found a very convincing argument. So the argument for such a for the possibility of such a realization is called CYLG correspondence, which roughly speaking says the following. So in the Calabi-Yau side, I have the curve, the elliptic curve, which is defined as, let me see, sits inside P2, which is defined as, which sits inside O of negative 3. So I'm looking at the gauge linear sigma model with the fields being x, y, z, and p. There's a sixth direction. The weights would be 1, 1, 1, negative 3. If you look at the GIT quotient, as take a very special GIT stability condition, means that you take a closed set, which is the exceptional set, and then form the quotient, you would get that's P equal to 0. I think. No, that's 0, 0, 0. Cross C. So you delete the origin from C3 and then make the quotient, you get a P2. But there's a fiber direction which has weight negative 3 on the action. So you get the geometry of minus 3. And there's a energy or super potential in the gauge, the two-dimensional gauge linear sigma model, which tells you that P has to be 0. Therefore, you get P2. Actually, let me write it down. So it's mu squared, mu is the moment map, which is used to do this reduction, GIT reduction, plus d. So w is equal to f times p, which is the invariant on the sixth action. It's dw squared, mu squared plus p df squared plus f squared. So by setting p equal to 0 and mu to be a constant, sorry, first you set mu to be a constant, you get this GIT quotient, which is O minus 3. Then you set P equal to 0, you get P2. And finally, you set F equal to 0, you get the curve. So this is one side of the CYLG correspondence. On the other side, you take a different GIT stability condition. Now, the exceptional set is not 0, 0, 0 cross C anymore. It's actually C3 cross 0. That's the other exceptional set. Then the GIT quotient would be C3 cross C minus Z divided by C3, which is C3 divided by Z3. So this is what you get by setting this equal to a constant. Now, in this set, P is already equal to zero. So I want, anyway, I want P to be zero in, P is not equal to zero, my bad. P is not equal to zero. Now you want this one to attain its minima. Therefore you want df to be zero. So you are looking at the critical points of f. So the model is called LG model, where W is essentially f, which is this polynomial, times P. This bracket means the expectation value in physics terminology. So the LG CY correspondence says that not only that you have a correspondence on the geometry, you also have some correspondence on some physics quantities, which in math terms would be Gromov, generating series of Gromov-Witten invariants of this Clavier variety, and solutions to the Witten equation attached to this singularity. So on the Clavier side, you look at holomorphic maps, and then you count the number of solutions to this differential equation. On the LG side, you look at another system, d bar u plus d bar w equal to zero. You can also do the counting. It's called the FJLW theory, fine Jarvis Ryan Witten theory. The geometric objects would be Lefschetz symbols, essentially, attached to this singularity. All right, so this generating series can be expressed by the natural integrals, chain integrals or period integrals in the two geometries on at the genus zero level. So at the g equal to zero level, on the Clavier side, you would be looking at integrals. On the LG side, you also look at integrals. The most natural integrals in the LG theory is the oscillating integral, e to the negative f, dx dy dz. So this says that whenever you see something natural on this side, there should be some interpretation on this side too. This is a solution to the GKZ system. I have already two realizations or two corresponding objects, which are the period integrals. So I should have another one which realizes these solutions to the inhomogeneous Peacock operator. It turns out the that realization is a chain integral. So this is what is expected by the CYLG correspondence. Let me actually tell you what this chain is. So in the previous discussions, I have mentioned that the orbifold point in the moduli space seemed to be very special. We all know that the cusp-like singularities, where the fibers become singular, are very special. But for the fiber over the orbifold point, nothing is singular. What distinguishes it is that it has some extra symmetry comparing to the fibers in the neighborhood. So again, let me draw this graph. So at some cusp-like singularities, the fiber would degenerate. A generic fiber over torus. At the orbifold point, it's not degenerate, but it has some extra symmetry induced by some PGL transformation in P2. So the Asher integral formula tells you that this point should play a role in the whole realization. So we can ask the question, for the elliptic curve family, what makes the orbifold point special? Let me remind you that the equation is this, and the cost for like singularities would be psi equal to infinity and 1 rho, third root of unity. And the Obiefeld singularity is psi equal to 0. Of course, it's special by looking at this one. But if you really want to understand what happens, an easy way, I found the most natural way, is to look at each fiber as a branched cover of a P1. So it's a 3-to-1 cover over P1, and the genus is 1. Therefore, you know at a generic point, psi, you have 6 simply branched points. So let me take Z to be 1, and then the equation for the curve would be y cubed minus 3 psi xy plus x cubed equal to 1. There are 6 simply branched points for generic psi. What makes the psi equal to 0 point special is the degeneration of this branch variety. At psi equal to 0, you only get 3 branch points. So these two would converge to 1 point, and these two would converge to 1 point, and these two. So for the cost of like a singularity, the degeneration of the branch variety would create a vanishing cycle. In this case, you don't have a vanishing cycle, but you do have something special. What is special is this guy, actually. It has some extra symmetry. Let me call this C of psi. Now, if you try to compute this chain integral, you do get the solution to the inhomogeneous Peikoff-Fuchs equation. So this interpretation is kind of motivated by the LG-CY correspondence. We know that we must be able to find something by looking at what happens at psi equal to 0, the orbit for the singularity, or the natural point where our LG model is defined. Right, the endpoints of this chain cannot be arbitrary, because I want the integral to satisfy a differential equation. The endpoints are defined by a nice polynomial. So for a generic psi, I have P2, generic psi. And I have cubic curve, which is F equal to 0. The endpoints would be x cubed plus y cubed equal to 0, or the cyclical permutation of this polynomial. So I would have 9 points for the intersection. 3 of them are very special. They're actually the 3 torsion points on the elliptic curve. The elliptic curve is a group, and you have torsion points. And there are six extra points. So this would be 3 torsion points. And the chain is the path connecting this to this, or this to this, whatever you want. So if you look at the uniformization of this elliptic curve, you realize this as the quotient of C by Z2, uniformization of this curve by C. So this map is given by theta functions. I hope you know what this means. Anyway, so there's a map from from C to P2. X equals a theta function. P is 0, 0, 3z, 3 tau. Omega, let me say omega. So this map is the following. It's from C to the curve. This is parameterized by omega. Y of omega would be another theta function. this one sits inside P2. Now, the endpoints of the chain would be solutions to this theta cubed plus theta cubed. So it has some nice interpretation in terms of modular forms. If you apply the same story to the Y stress curve family, you also get an extra solution, which is for the Y stress family. Do you have any guess for the extra points? For the endpoints of this extra solution? So you have a degree three differential operator from the GKZ symmetries. You have two purity integrals, and this is a chain integral. The endpoints of the chain would also be defined by some polynomial equation. It's the following. So for the Y stress, you have a cubic curve. The endpoints are given by the intersection of x equal to 0 with the cubic curve. Now again, I can apply the uniformization of this Weierstrass curve, which is given by the Weierstrass P function. So you have a map from the W plane to P2. W is sent to x, which is Weierstrass P function of W. So these endpoints of this the endpoints of this chain would be zeros of the Weierstrass P function. By the way, the zeros of this would be the two torsion points, but the zeros of this function is actually highly non-trivial. This worked out only in the 80s by Archer and Zagier. So anyway, what I want to point out is that you cannot replace the endpoints of the chain by its homotopy class. It has really something to do with the symmetries of the defining equation or the arithmetic they are in. Okay, I think I'll stop here. Thank you.
Curve counting and Witten stuff, is that saying something about the quantum differential equation on?
Yeah, that's actually the new point that I'm taking. I'm thinking of everything as some realization of the same GKZ symmetry. The quantum differential equation is also derived from symmetries. Of course, in quantum theory, it's derived from the world identity, but it's also a symmetry of the path integral, of the action function. There must be some harsh theoretical explanation of this chain, but so far I didn't find one. Perhaps in terms of motifs. Actually, for the sunrise diagram, Bloch and Wanhoff tried to find some interpretation of the 2D integral as some regulator, but it's not realized on the elliptic curve. It's something living inside to the ambient space.
Okay. Well, let's say it's